You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Watford and England legend, Luther Blissett. Good morning, Luther.
Good morning.
Morning. Good morning. Good to see you this morning.
Oh, it's a nice morning. How lovely was it for it to be all sunshiny and bright this morning when I got up?
It was just gorgeous. But you know what? The main thing is it's light.
It is.
That's what I like about
Love it.
Love it. It's light. Because we did struggle through the winter.
Through the darkness.
Oh, I saw a lot of darkness, as you can imagine. It's the Comedy Breakfast at 6:34. Villa won yesterday. They beat Derby County 2-1 in the playoff final. The richest game in world football. £170 million is what they were saying.
I remember when Watford did it in 99, we were talking about it's going to be £50 million. We're thinking, oh my God, what a lot of money.
Enormous amounts of cash. And now that is dwarfed. Now that is less than what the bottom team get. Actually, I think they get a bit more than that. But even still, it's a huge amount of money. Villa were the right team to go up, weren't they?
I think Dean Smith done a great job there. When he came in, he left Brentford, and a lot of people thought, would that be the right move, the way that Brentford were going? And he's come there, and he had a few dodgy little bit of a start. But the last 10 games, what a run that is.
Well, they won about 13. They won about 13 out of 14. They put themselves in the playoff, and they were safely within the playoffs. Yeah. I think they beating West Brom was the moment,
was a big turnaround for them to do that one, because West Brom obviously would have been one of the favourites to go straight up in the first place, and then definitely to have got through in the playoffs if they did.
So, very, very tight. Fine margins when you think about that it goes to penalties in the semi-final.
Yeah.
And then in the final, I thought Villa were the better team. There's a thing in the Times today about where the playoff sides can stay in the Premiership. It just gives you the list of the teams. The last team to establish themselves in the Premiership with Crystal Palace, who went up in, I believe, 2011 or 2012, something like that, and then West Ham after that as well. After that, a lot of the teams that came up went straight down or down the season after, Norwich being one who went and took a season and a half. Huddersfield took a couple of seasons. It's not easy.
It is not easy when you come up. Whether you go to, there's no guarantees whether you go up as champions or the runners-up.
Fulham came up as runners-up, went straight down.
Yeah, there's no guarantees at all, because a lot depends on the squad of players you have. And then a lot of things got to be how you adapt to playing in the Premier League. Fulham didn't quite adapt in the right way. They came there with lots and lots of players, brought a load, 12 new players they brought in or whatever at Fulham.
Too many.
And that disrupted everything. They never really settled down to a way of playing, which didn't suit them.
Actually, I've been corrected. Fulham did go up in the playoffs. They beat Villa in last year's final, didn't they? They did. I'm looking at some of the teams that went up. Burnley went up. They'd already been up, hadn't they, Burnley? Yeah. So they were coming up with a bit of Premiership nous, which is perhaps what you need. Plus, they hung on to their manager as well. They didn't hang on. They just didn't sack him.
Yeah.
And they held their nerves, their nerve. Middlesbrough came up and went down. Hull came up and went down. It's not easy. Brighton, I think Brighton might go down next year, actually.
They could do now. But it depends who comes in and what players they bring in. Because you look at their squad, and they did brilliantly to stay in the league. No doubt about it. Stay in the Premier League, I think Brighton did an amazing job. And, I've said before on this show that at those games they lost at the end, been spread over a season. Nobody would have thought anything of it. They thought they're safe, and that's what you want it to be.
Is all you wanted.
Yeah.
I don't think it's specifically about the playoffs. I think it's just a very, very hard league. Unless you spent an enormous amount of money like Fulham in the right way. Remember, Fulham spent all the money while they're in the Championship, integrated those players into the team, came up, and then just continued that momentum. Wolves did that.
The difference, I think, with Wolves is Wolves brought players that were, they were Premiership quality, those players that came in. And all they've done is just keep building on that. You can see Wolves being probably the club outside the top six to be really knocking on the door, because he's gonna make them stronger again this summer.
Well, that is the key, isn't it? I just want to talk about this thing about coming up through the playoffs. Do you think Villa will stay up, by the way? Because I don't know. I don't know.
I think that is...
I know what our producer Andy thinks, who is a West Brom fan, I should point out.
And he want them to come straight back down.
What, he want them? He's got a, he set up a shrine in his house, which he prays to every night.
Demand them to come.
Andy has said, yes, okay.
Quick point about Villa, I'd say, is obviously incredible achievement, and they've got £170 million to spend. But rather like if Derby had gone up as well, the main problem that they've got... is most of that loans. 170 million he's got to go on loans to either buy the players that are in the team or replace those players in the team. I mean, Abrahams, Mings, El Ghazi, Howes, Twanzi, but I mean, that's about £100 million.
So bitter.
Just to keep the players that they've got on the pitch. But
so when, bitter.
And very twisted. It's sad. It's coming across very twisted as well now, I think.
So grumpy.
Yeah.
It's hard to sleep with this chip on my shoulder. But West Brom would have been in the same position as well, because we've got so many loan players. And so you have to gamble to get into the Premier League, and you're like 170 million. But immediately about 100, 120 million of that's got to go on signing the players that you borrowed to get there.
Yeah, I mean, that is a fair point, isn't it, Luther?
That is a point. But then the players you borrowed to get there, some of those you would not get. They will not be able to keep those players. So,
no.
You know, so...
Well,
so,
we think of Derby. I mean, there's no way...
I mean,
that,
goodness me, Derby.
Mason Mount and Harry Wilson weren't staying around at
no
Derby.
No chance, no.
I imagine if they went up. So this is the same for all the promoted teams. I suppose with Wolves, there was less disruption because essentially they built the team in the Championship of Premier League quality players, ran away with the Championship, and then just carried on in the Premier League and went, oh, yeah, well, this is how good we are.
Yes.
Whereas that is unusual for most teams. But that is a gamble as well. It's all you can take players on loan and try and get you up, and then you've got to replace half the team. Or you can spend an enormous amount of money and hope it works out. And it might not.
There are no guarantees, are there? Let's be quite honest. There are no guarantees. And it depends a lot on the players that you have. Because the strongest thing you have a really good mentality. It's quite interesting what you know, Dean Smith said about the way that Villa ended up getting promotion. It was something where the players, you know, they felt that he had to reconnect the players with the supporters again. And it reminds me of when Graham Taylor went there back in 88 and got them promotion. You know, that was one of his things. Reconnect the players with the supporters, so you know, you go at it all as one, and they did that. They got promotion into that season as well, and it's quite interesting. He's pretty much said
he's done the
very
same thing.
Yeah,
is Villa a bit of a moody club? Do you think?
I don't know if it's about a moody club. The rivalry they have in there, you know, with your West Broms and your Birmingham's and West Brom and all that sort of thing. It makes it, you know, every game they play, apart from having to beat whoever up there against, they're always looking over their shoulder at what the others are doing.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. I think maybe it's that distraction of looking at the others and what are they doing. You know, talk about noisy neighbours in Manchester. I mean, these neighbours do more than noisy, aren't they? And always knocking on your door. And
there's a lot of them.
Yes.
There's a lot. That's the point. You're surrounded by them. Mm. Midlands football. Well, Midlands football is starting to have a bit of a revival, which is nice to see.
About time, isn't it? Let's be honest. Let's be honest. It was due.
The looks I'm getting from Andy. Let's talk about this all morning, shall we?
Yeah. I think we just keep saying every now and then just bring...
This is Love Sport.
We're going to have the big debate at this point. Now, this comes on the back of news that Newcastle may well have been bought. Mike Ashley may well have sold his majority shareholding in Newcastle to Sheikh Khaled, who is, I'm told, Sheikh Mansour's cousin.
Yeah.
We weren't sure if it was brother, but I think it's cousin.
His cousin.
I think it's this extended Abu Dhabi royal family. They say his personal worth is not out there in the public domain, but the family is worth £150 billion.
He did try to buy Liverpool, didn't he last year? That was a £2 billion that he tried. So he's not short of a few bob.
Newcastle, I mean, in a sense, Newcastle would be cheaper than Liverpool. There's no doubt about that. Assets would be cheaper.
They're talking about, what, £350 million? I think it's about £350 million.
£350 million, yes. I mean, on the BBC website, it says Mike Ashley is in talks with this, with the billionaire Sheikh Khaled. £350 million.
Rafa will be happy, won't he?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Rafa will be happy, although he wants to find out a little bit more about the owner before he commits, because they're obviously pushing a contract at him now, and he's going to go, no.
Oh, he's too savvy, Rafa, to dive into anything like that.
I mean, basically what we're talking about is we've got various Arab royal families owning various clubs, right?
Yeah.
Including two members of the same family, if this deal goes through, owning different clubs in the Premier League. Is this healthy for our
sibling rivalry, wouldn't it? The thing is, if they do come in, all they're going to be is just try and outdo what they've done.
Well, I'm sure Newcastle fans would be glad to
hear that. They won't complain at all.
No, but, I mean...
My biggest thing is just... I just think it's such a shame that football clubs are heading, and they're all heading that way, that there's no longer going to be owned by anybody from...
From these islands. Yeah. I mean, Jim Ratcliffe, the owner of Ineos...
The
richest man who wants to buy Chelsea. He's worth about 18 or 19 billion. So he has the money. Mm. And he is also very interested in sports teams. He's bought Ben Ainsley's yacht racing team. He's bought the Team Sky, who are now called Team Ineos. And he's looking at buying Chelsea. And that thing is ongoing. Mm. Although it does seem to be, it's not at the level that this is at. But yeah, we've got billionaires from China owning the Wolves team. We've got billionaires from the Arab countries, from Qatar and from Abu Dhabi, owning
Malaysia
various...
and all sorts of places.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Americans who own, you know, Stan Kroenke owns Arsenal.
Manchester
John
United.
Henry. That's right, the Glazers. Is this healthy for our football, or is this just inevitable in a game as global and as just full of money as the English game is?
I think it's one of those inevitable things. We were talking about it earlier on, and I think you're right in what you said, that they're all going to be owned by big corporates all over the world.
There's nothing to be done. There's nothing to be done.
Because, you know, what the Premier League has done, it has created a platform now that these companies, and it's not really about the football for them, is it? And it was mentioned today, you know, they call it not corporate washing or whatever.
Sports washing.
You know, that sort of thing.
And we're not talking there's anything... Listen.
No. I'm not implying that there's anything illegal in it. But, you know, these companies are all doing it. And, yes, the football clubs benefit and supporters all benefit from it. But I just think it's such a shame that there are no people that are connected with that town or whatever no longer going to be involved in, because then there has to be a real connection for me with the people and the town, because you support a football club because there's some sort of connection there. It's not just because they're the ones that win everything. The ones that do that, they never stick around particularly long. Yeah, the people that do that sort of thing.
But I mean I'm trying to think of a single club now.
It's very, very difficult to find one.
I mean Watford, right? Your own club you
Italians.
Grew up with. They're owned by the Pozzo family,
yeah,
who have no connection with Watford. It's not like they, you know, it's not like they know the town or anything like that. It's
I mean, that is a business. That is a business opportunity. And because the way football, as we've been saying so many times over the years, it is becoming a business and more it's been recognised for that, then this sort of thing will happen. It'll become a norm.
But in terms of that connection, you were talking earlier about Villa and about Dean Smith and how he's got that connection back with the fans. Does it actually matter who owns the club? As long as they see themselves as custodians of the club,
well, I think
and they steward things
I think
properly.
Man City, and you look at Manchester United, it doesn't really matter. The Manchester United thing, remember when the Glazers first took over, I mean, it never stopped going on about it, you know, about what they're doing to the club. But now it's just background noise.
It is background noise, but Manchester United are poorly run. They are poorly run. They don't have a director of football. Yeah. Ed Woodward is making loads of money.
And they're looking
commercial.
But they're looking now to finally do something about that, as are so many more clubs now in England are beginning to go down that road.
But
it's taken time.
But it has taken too much time. The thing you can say about Man City is they're a well-run club.
Absolutely.
They're doing it in the right way, as far as, obviously, they're spending a load of money, and maybe they've actually broke FFP rules. We will see what the ruling is. But at least there seems to be a decent plan for sorting things out.
Yeah, and, you know, the owners are very much wanting their club to be the best. And they do everything they can. And, I mean Watford played them in the FA Cup final, as everybody will know. And, I mean, I've been up there a few times to hospitality and that sort of thing, and spoken to various people there. And you see it firsthand how well that club is run.
It's a real
the structure and the way
detail,
it is absolutely brilliant. Everything about, especially that final, the way everything was presented, and that was just, it was just absolutely brilliant the way they did everything.
You know what? And Man City fans, they're absolutely not complaining. They won the treble.
Yeah.
I think there's quite a lot of, I mean, I suppose what I would say is, how many teams would you say last year, how many of the fans would have had a good experience through the season? Watford fans would have enjoyed it. The ending was unfortunate.
But
Watford fans, Wolves fans would have enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think you look down probably to probably about where Watford are, 10th.
Yeah,
and I think everyone there would have enjoyed it pretty much.
I don't think so. Man United fans definitely didn't enjoy it. Arsenal fans have not.
We're talking about the difference is when you talk about the big clubs, and your testimony to that being an Arsenal supporter, even when you won the FA Cup, you guys were still felt you were short of so many things and whatever. There's always something that takes the gloss away because you've been used to being the top dog. And when you're not the top dog, nothing's ever right until you get back up there.
No,
and
that's
always going to be a thing. Whereas the other clubs that aren't ever really going to win that, not in my lifetime, is you're never going to win the Premier League.
I would say.
They have good seasons because they finished well, they've had some good results, and they've challenged in the cup competition.
I mean, I think obviously, and we'll talk more about this, and we'd like to get your views as well if you want to get involved. But I'd like to know what people think, but I would say certainly Arsenal fans did not enjoy this season. I mean, they got through it and it was probably slightly better than last season and it could have a really good ending.
Yeah.
But there's a general grumpiness going on. And like I say, when Stan Kroenke bought all the shares, some of these people who own shares through 3-4 generations, it felt like the end of something. It really did. It felt like, there goes the connection. It's not our club anymore.
Yes.
We like to think it is, but the truth is it ain't.
No.
It's Stan Kroenke's. He can do what he wants. I imagine if he could move it to a more fortuitous location that would get more people in, he would do that. And I think it's a bit of a problem, that's all. People coming in, we know what happened with Vincent Tam when he first turned up. Not Vincent, was it at Cardiff?
At Cardiff. Changed the colours of shirts.
Changed him to red.
Bluebirds wearing him red.
Yeah, and all that sort of stuff. And we know about the Hull owner as well, Vincent Alam, is it? I can't think of his name.
Yeah, I think it was.
And I think there are issues with this ownership. Listen, we will wait and see what Sheikh Khaled is like. If he's anything like the Man City guys and he does it in the right way, could be an amazing time for
him. You can only go on the fact that because there is a relationship there, and the way that they have run the business, and you think it's going to be almost a carbon copy of what they've done there. They'll run it on the same basis.
Hey, I'm sure Newcastle fans will be happy enough.
Very happy as well. And they've got a great support base to actually enjoy it, haven't they?
Oh, they'll have an absolutely brilliant time. We will see. And you let us know what you think. 0208 70 20 558. Is this a positive for, well, Newcastle won and English football generally, that another billionaire has come in and taken ownership of another one of our football clubs?
This is Love Sport.
Is Andy?
Yeah, back page stuff. Back of the Times, Benitez wary of new owner. Rafa Benitez understood to be seeking assurances about Newcastle United's future after a Middle Eastern billionaire announced that he had agreed terms to buy the club.
I mean, well, it's wariness is perfectly acceptable. There's no reason. He doesn't know who the guy is. He's a cousin. He's a member of the Abu Dhabi royal family. Does he have the money to spend?
Yeah.
But this guy, by the way, I mean, this is not... This guy who's been talked about taking over, he's got a PhD, he's done quite a lot of finance, he went to Harvard. The guy's not an idiot.
No, quite. But
it's really, I think Rafa Benitez is wary. Has he got the funds?
Well, this is it.
And I mean, will he give him the funds?
As any football fan knows now, it's not just how much your bloke's worth, it's how much they're prepared to spend.
Quite.
You know, West Brom have got a billionaire and he's spent about... threepence halfpenny since he's been at the club. So this is the problem. Speaking of money, Villa have obviously hit the jackpot, £170 million. Picture of Jack Grealish having cut his head by dropping the trophy upon himself. Such were the excitement that they were going up.
Did he drop it or was it when they lifted it and it just brushed against his eye as well?
Well, he's got quite a hefty nasty
cut. Gash.
I don't know whether he dropped it or not.
Yeah, if you're going to get one, get it off a trophy that your team has won.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
Quite nice. Although
what a story that is going forward.
It's not much of it's not really a trophy, is it? I find it weird when they hand out a trophy.
Well,
I mean, they should just hand and the cash.
Yeah,
I told you this.
No, it's a great... you've got to have a trophy. You've got to have a bit of silverware. You've got to have a bit of something sparkle for the cameras,
They should
you?
Just bring out, as we suggested today, all of the cash.
Wheel
and they
it
throw
out
it up into the air like they do on the Crystal Maze and the players have to catch it.
And what they catch
to buy
before
their
hits
replacements.
The floor. That's what, yeah, to buy their replacements. Yeah, they get some of it, gets as a pay rise. Anyway, Villa are going up.
Yeah.
And Jack Grealish will, we think, lead the team in. And I mean, I think it's... I was talking about him yesterday. I was saying whether he'd leave or whether he'd stay. I mean, of course, he might be offered a huge amount of money by one of the big six. It's a possibility.
He will. Spurs, he won't. He won't be going anywhere this season.
I don't think so, because you'd have thought, from his point of view, sure, he can make a bit more money elsewhere. but he can lead his boyhood club
this in the Premier League for the first time. That is a massive
thing. He's a Brummie, and he's going to be captain. He's going to be centre of the team. Why would he want to...
Want to go anywhere, and he shouldn't want to go anywhere, not at this stage.
And the other thing, Villa don't need to sell him now. And they also need to replace however many other players, because half their team's on loan, isn't it? You know, the centre-backs of Twanzebe and Mings, Abraham, two or three others across the squad, they're going to have to invest. But we're hearing that their £50 million debt has helpfully been wiped out by them being promoted to the Premier League. A little bit of Azerbaijan news, a regular feature on this show.
Way more than we ever thought we'd talk about.
Exactly.
But we're talking about Azerbaijan, and this is about a journalist who was murdered a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, Bernd Leno, the goalkeeper, the Arsenal goalkeeper, called it a scandal that Mkhitaryan can't play out
it
there.
It is a scandal.
More and more stuff coming out. 4 years ago, Rasim Aliyev was beaten so severely by a group of men after making critical comments about an Azerbaijani footballer, Javid Hussainov. Hussainov himself, the player, served only 1 year of a 4-year prison sentence for his part in organising the attack.
So he was criticised by this journalist. He basically got some heavies to go down and beat the crap out of the guy to the point where he died. And then he served 1 year in prison, and no doubt he's now out again. And he's playing?
Yeah, 31-year-old continues to play for Gabala, one of Azerbaijan's leading clubs. The girlfriend of the victim says it's a disgrace that Azerbaijan has been given the prestige of hosting football matches by UEFA. And then we have this continued endless assault of how many tickets have been sold. 5,000, 6,000. Is anybody going? Does anybody want to be there? It's pretty shocking. I mean, I can't imagine a British parallel of a player arranging for journalists to be beaten up.
Well, I mean, listen, we all get criticism from time to time, and it isn't pleasant.
It is part of what that comes with being in a sport.
And
if you're in the headlines, you've got to pretty much accept that this is going to happen.
How is this country being given a major European final by UEFA? I mean, it's just about
money,
really, right?
Did you realise as well what happened? They were turned down for holding the Champions League final by UEFA,
right. But
then they awarded them the Europa.
This is basically,
which is unbelievable.
This is basically what they've done, is they've given enough, like however much of the bribe it costs for a country to buy a Champions League final. They went, well, you're
they
not having
it.
A Champions League final because you can't, because you've had journalists murdered. But we'll give
it wasn't even that. It's the fact that they, but their report, they said that they didn't have enough hotels. Even after all that sort of thing was not to fulfill the criteria, but it's okay for the Europa, which is outrageous.
Two teams as big as Liverpool and Spurs, Arsenal and Chelsea, are going out there, and hardly any of their fans can go, and hardly any of the dignitaries are going. It is disgusting. You know what? We just want to get this final out of the way. Hopefully, my team wins, and then we can not think about them. And still, of course, the European finals next year, when some of the group games and I think one of the quarterfinals will be played in the same stadium. So these things don't go away, do they?
No.
It is disgusting. Of course it is, but everyone thinks it's disgusting as well. But hey, short of boycotting the game, what do you do?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the incident involving this journalist that was killed has echoes of this Armenia Mkhitaryan dispute, because the player who was subsequently jailed was caught waving a flag in a game against Apollon Limassol, who were obviously a Cypriot club. He was waving a Greek flag to deliberately provoke their supporters. The journalist wrote an article saying it was immoral, impertinent, and the guy was unable to control himself, shouldn't represent this football team. And he was promptly beaten up by six blokes.
And killed. Yeah.
It's absolutely horrific.
It's awful. I mean, it doesn't mean that a country should be held responsible for the actions of an individual, but
he only did 1 year in prison and he's out playing football.
Well, they have their own human rights issues, as we know, but it's grim and there's no way the game should be taking place there. But you know what? Come 10 o'clock tomorrow evening, it'll be done and we never have to speak of them again, at least for the moment, until next summer.
Love Sport.
Some big... big games coming up this week. Spurs in a Champions League final on Saturday. Before that, Spurs play Liverpool, of course, and Chelsea take on Arsenal Europa League final. Well, who better to talk to than the former Spurs and Chelsea defender, Graham Roberts. Good morning, Graham.
Good morning.
Morning. All right, let's start with Spurs. We've talked this morning, myself and Luther Blissett are here, we talked this morning about Harry Kane and how he said he's fit. Do you think he should start in the final? Do you think Poch will start him in the final?
100%. I think he's such an influence in the team. And knowing Harry, how I do, he trains very, very hard when he's injured. He's probably the hardest trainer in the club. So he will be, he'll be as fit as the rest of them anyway.
Graham. All right, mate. How are you? All right.
Yeah, good. Pal, yeah.
Good, Graham. The way that I've seen when Harry's come back in after the couple of injuries that he's had earlier on, you know, through the season, it has taken him a little while for him to really get anywhere near the form that he was showing before that. So my opinion that he shouldn't play, he should start on the bench. And I think it would actually disrupt the way that Spurs have been. You've got one player there scored a hat-trick in the semi-final. That get you through? You're going to leave him out?
No. I think the manager he might play all four of them up there.
Against Liverpool?
Play Kane up front and then play Son, Moura and Dele Alli behind and Eriksen and Sissoko maybe in midfield. I don't know. I don't know what the manager's going to do, but he has a lot of options, Luther.
Well, he certainly does at the moment. I mean, also, we're talking about they interviewed Poch this morning. He's banned all talk about him and his future ahead of Saturday. I mean, in the end, he's made some interesting noises about wanting Daniel Levy to spend money and saying that if they win the Champions League, maybe he'll be off because what more can he do? What's your opinion about where he's going to go after the game on Saturday?
Well, he's going to go home. He's told us all that.
Yeah, so, that's true. He did say that. He'll have a cup of tea. But what's he going to do after that?
He's going to be at Tottenham. He's come out last week. I don't know if you saw Sky and all that. He said it's the best club in the world. He's at the best club in the world. He's got the best stadium, best training facilities. I think he's near enough been guaranteed money to spend in the summer. And I've been told it's a lot of money. The club is generating lots of money now. So he's not going anywhere. I think he loves playing the media. I think I'm in the training ground in about an hour's time and going to see the lads train and everything. And he's absolutely a fantastic person. You know, he'll have lunch with us afterwards. All the legends will be there. So, it'll be a great day. And Poch is not going anywhere, Lufo. You know, I think it's all this media, you know, they keep digging it up. Oh, he's never said he's going to stay. Well, he signed a six-year contract last year. So if he wasn't going to stay, why does he sign a six-year contract? So he'll be here for a long time.
I mean, now you've played in big European finals for Spurs. You scored an equaliser, of course, in the win against Anderlecht, and they won on penalties. I mean, do you think that Spurs, that might be the way it goes on Saturday?
Yeah, I do. I think, having spoken to people at Man City, and they didn't want to play Tottenham in the Champions League. The only team they wanted to miss was Tottenham because they know Tottenham would give them a game. And I think Liverpool the same. I think they would have rather have had Ajax in the final. We're going there. We're underdogs. Everybody's told us that Liverpool have already picked the cup up. You know, I look forward to that afterwards. I think the boys will go there. They've had 3 weeks where they've had fantastic training. The one good thing is the manager will have every player to pick from. It's the first time this season we haven't had any injuries. So that's the good thing. And everybody will be raring to go on Saturday night.
Now, I wanted to ask you about another of your former clubs, Chelsea as well, taking on Arsenal in the Europa League final in Baku. And there's been issues with tickets for both of these games, for the Spurs-Liverpool game and the Chelsea-Arsenal game. And also the issue with Henrik Mkhitaryan not being able to go out with the Arsenal team. What's your view about all of this?
Oh, it's an absolute disgrace, really. I think, you know, the Chelsea and Arsenal supporters, it's not fair on them. I'm not on there. I don't support any of them clubs. I did play for Chelsea, but I'm a Tottenham fan through and through. But why would you play in Azerbaijan? Have a European final there. You know, surely they could have changed it and give it to them next year or something like that when it's easy. You know, you've got two English clubs, have to travel 9 hours. The supporters, I think, are having to travel maybe 20 hours to get there. It's a ridiculous situation. So, I don't think it's very good. And I think also, when both clubs in the Champions League only get 16,000 tickets, you know, that's not good. And all I think all the corporate, you know, should help and give some back. You know, I tried to get a ticket for my son. I'm going with the club, but I tried to get a ticket for my son, and it was 4,000 odd euros for a £150 ticket.
Yeah,
it's, you know, who's making this money?
Yeah.
You know, surely that should be stopped. You shouldn't be allowed to sell your tickets. If you are caught, then that's it. You know, they should, you know, ban them for life. And
yeah.
I think Tottenham have done some of that with three of their
supporters.
They have, or four.
Yes, yes, we've read that.
So
tell me, who's... All right, then, with a neutral head, as you will be, for the gate tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is that possible for you, Graham?
Who do you think...
No, not
who do you think realistically... Who do you think realistically will win it tomorrow?
Well, I'm hoping Chelsea win it.
Yeah.
Right, and now you've got the emotional one out of it.
But I think Arsenal have... they have some great attack. I think the one person they're going to miss is Ramsey.
Yes.
I think he helps the two strikers
a lot.
And he makes forward runs and they can come off and get the ball. So I think that's a big loss for him. Mkhitaryan not going, obviously that's a big loss as well. So I think, but defensive-wise, I think Arsenal struggle. And, you know, I think Chelsea with Eden Hazard, they're all saying it's his last game. We'll wait and see on that one because of the price. But, you know, I think they might have just a little bit too much for
them. Well, we'll see. And we know what you think will happen on Saturday. I wanted to mention your charity, Centre Algarve. It's a holiday centre for people with special needs. So tell us about this.
Yeah, I've been with them now for 3.5-4 years. A friend of mine built a hotel in Portugal. It's an amazing charity. We had a dinner, a gala dinner on, not last Friday, the Friday before, on the 17th of May. And Harry Kane came, and it was for the UEFA Cup team as well, because it's 35 years just gone, the last few days, that we won the UEFA Cup. And so we had a big meeting there, and everybody came for the dinner, and it was a great night. And then Harry came and presented each player with a cap. To honour the win. So you know, so it was a great night, and we had some special needs children there. Harry had photos of them, but it's an amazing charity. It's for special needs children. What I do is I raise the money and over the year, and we send people on holiday, children, adults. Whoever wants to go to the centre is for special needs children, so it's a fantastic charity.
Well, good luck with that, Graham. Not so much good luck for Saturday, obviously. But enjoy the trip. It's an amazing stadium, is what they're saying. Yeah. Nice to speak to you, Graham Roberts there.
All the best.
Right, Chelsea and Tottenham. God, at the abuse I shouted at him over the years. He was a tough boy, though.
He would give it back, trust me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've been clotheslined by him during the game. Don't worry about that.
Well, it is funny, actually, because speaking to my two mates, I've got two mates who run a fruit and veg place in East Finchley, proper Tottenham boys, and they talk about, and I say, oh, Paul Miller, he's pretty much, you know, he's proper Spurs. He goes, have you spoken to Graham Roberts? I said, yeah. He goes, he's even worse. Yeah. Just total blinkers.
And mate, you can imagine the pair of them together.
Oh, they just, build each other up. Yeah. So I'm sure they're very excited. They are underdogs, though, for Saturday, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I think
big
quite
underdogs.
Rightly, too. Especially having Liverpool were in the final last year and the way they have stepped up again this year. Absolutely. So,
and I cannot believe that Spurs will play all three of Harry Kane, Lucas Moura and Heung-Min Song and Dele Alli up front. I can't, unless they play Darren Wanyama in the middle, and even then,
if they do that, if they do that, everybody else needs to be a defender.
Well, quite.
And not leave their positions for the entire period
at
of the game.
At all. I mean, teams do a back six, front four. They do that, but I'm not sure you'd be advised to do that against Liverpool.
No.
Not really.
Anyway,
some big European finals this week. We'll be talking a lot about Chelsea-Arsenal tomorrow, the game in Baku, and then coming up to the European Cup final Saturday, Spurs against Liverpool.
This is Love Sport.
The front page is either Tories embrace no-deal Brexit, Brexit party success in Europe has forced Conservative leadership contenders, whoever they may be, they're falling in and out of the running every second, to take tougher line on EU. They've seen the success of the Brexit party, Nigel Farage, and they've said they're going to go all in. Jeremy Corbyn may finally be asked to make up his mind and go for a second referendum. John McDonnell obviously banging the drum yesterday about they should go for a second referendum, ask the public again, kick it into the long grass, if you will. Diane Abbott's also for that. And that's largely the front pages.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, I tried to push Peter Bone on this earlier. In the end, the Tories have to go to the right. Yeah. They have to, because most of those voters who voted for the Brexit Party, not all of them, most of them would be from the right, would be Conservative voters. And the Tories have to get them back, otherwise they're going to lose the election by 100 seats. And so therefore the Labour Party are being forced to go to the left. They have no choice. And the left is Remain. Is in the main, Remain. Yeah. I know. And the problem is, of course, that then it's a betrayal of those 3 million voters, Labour voters in the heartlands, in the north and the estates, who voted for Leave. So you're going to upset some people along the way. Because it's not red and blue anymore. It's not left and right. It's Leave and Remain.
Yep.
Those are the battle lines.
People talk about the damage it's done to the Conservative Party. It's irreparably damaged Labour. I mean, how can they marry that north-south
split
they've
they
got?
They actually, simply can't. They can't do that. Short of having a leader going to the guys who voted for Leave and go, listen, you were sold a pup. We should have campaigned more vigorously for Remain. We're sorry you were wrong. And he's not going to do that.
He's not going to do that.
And there isn't a politician who can do that.
Saying he's got to go and choose.
Yeah, quite. And he does have to choose. Mm. The thing is, of course, that Jeremy Corbyn has been famously lukewarm on the European Union for years. And if he was just a private citizen, he would probably vote to leave. Mm. And now he's in a position where he has to campaign for Remain.
Yeah. And if he's going to do that, is he able to do that with any real conviction?
Well, that was the problem with the referendum. He didn't really campaign with any conviction, and that might have been part of the reason that Remain lost the referendum. Sorry, Andy, you were going to say?
No problem. Yeah, I was going to say, if he goes for a second referendum, though, he can at least hold his hands up. He'd almost be praying that Brexit win, and then he can say, well, look, we've had two referendums now. We've got to go with it, whatever Islington thinks.
Oh, there's no doubt. But he has actively said, hasn't he, that if they do go for a second referendum, he will actively campaign for Remain at that point. But he would rather that Leave won, and that was the end of it. We think. Yes. We are speculating. What else?
Who knows what he thinks? We talk about Brexit hitting us in the pocket potentially. 500,000 of us have ditched rip-off Big Six power firms this year. This is British Gas, Empower, Scottish Power, SSE. People getting £100 a month energy bills. Energy giants, New Year gift. £183 price hike many of us had. Yeah. And it's just too expensive. We're getting into summer now where perhaps we can turn the heating down and, you know, whatever. You can't turn the electric off.
It is expensive, but you can find cheaper deals. People should just get online and find cheaper deals. I mean, that's what they say. That is, go to a spokesman said, because you will find a cheaper deal on your energy bills. But they're
out
there.
Or wear a sweater.
They're out there. Or you can, I used to live in a house where there was, in fact, me and Luther, I remember this. I didn't grow up with central heating, right?
What's that?
Central heating.
Paraffin lamps, mate. Remember paraffin. Them? Paraffin heaters.
They stunk. We used to go and buy the paraffin round the corner and then bring it home and pour it in.
Boom, 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 boom.
SO blue. Do you even know what we're doing here? No.
No idea.
No. That was the paraffin.
Is that something they used to sing at Watford?
No. It's not.
There's no need to do that. And by the way, where is your team in the Premier League? No. Be quiet. Fine. Oh, stop that now. All right.
Anyway.
That is how quickly you can go from zero to where it needs to be.
Anyway.
It can happen to all of us.
Anyway, yes. I used to live in a house where there was one room where the heating was on, right? One room. And what would happen is you'd all be sitting in there in the room all hot and somebody would have to leave, right? And you go to open the door and they say, shut the door after you. And you go, all right. What do you want me to do? So you'd come out, you'd shut the door quickly and then come back. It was freezing the rest of the house. Didn't have central heating until I moved into my last flat about 20 years ago. It's the first time I had central heating. So people take these things for granted a little bit now, but it's expensive. It's very, very expensive. But find a cheaper deal.
You don't burn the house down quite so much now like it used to happen, didn't it? You used to have fires all the time.
Well, open fires. It was a different time.
My nan used to have one of those draft excluders that was like a big stuffed snake. Do you remember these?
Yeah, I've got a couple of those. Yeah,
you don't see those anymore. You don't get many houses young renters having those.
Houses are built to a slightly different standard.
They are, but you still do need them. You still do need them. It's always good to have them.
Yeah, it does save a lot of heating. I used to be a heating and ventilation engineer. I know all about this stuff. You see,
good man.
Yeah,
you see?
Thank you. The way you nodded there, like really? Yeah. what use is that? None now. In fact, somebody asked me to come around and help with their plumbing years ago, and I flooded the ground floor.
Good man.
So I won't be doing that again. Anyway, what else have you got?
Say a little prayer for me. Alexa app helps users connect with God. And I don't mean just screaming, oh, for God's sake, in the living room and it answers you back. People are, some 9.5 million Britons use smartphone speakers such as Amazon Echo, other brands available, to answer questions and control devices. And the church said that more than 75,000 of them engage with its new Church of England service.
Alexa, what's the meaning of life?
Quiet.
That sort of thing, right?
Give me some Psalms. Alexa, open the Church of England, and then it gets all sorts of stuff. Who is God? What is faith?
Really?
Yeah. People
you can ask
prayers.
Philosophical questions of Alexa.
6%. Can you imagine being at a dinner while this happened? 6% were requests for people asking for grace before a meal. Sorry, Alexa, can you say grace?
Well, yeah, when you say it yourself.
Yeah, but that's because they're just lazy. That's what it is. People are lazy and they're going, I don't want to do that. But yeah, Alexa, do that for me. That's just downright.
Okay, I don't know. It's not really for me. But you know what? If people want to use them for prayer, that's fine, I suppose. It's a bit odd, though, isn't it?
They could be asking for stand-up from you, couldn't they? When are you going to get an Alexa device? Alexa,
please give me some of Ian Stone's finest comedy. Well, do you know what? If that's what they want, that's fine. I'm happy to contribute in some way. Go on, then. Got anything else?
Yes. We're going to talk about the world's most disgusting fry-up, which I don't know whether you are. Are you on fry-ups or not? Luther's never had a fry-up, have you? You're an Adonis, a peak fry-up.
Occasionally you've got to go for the old beans and bacon and sausage.
You can't let the beans seep into the rest of it, though, can you? They have to be. Some people put beans in a separate bowl.
Yeah.
The Alan Partridge method, I believe it's called.
Separate them with the sausages.
That's the Partridge method. The sausages are a barrier.
Yes, I see that. I don't mind a fry up. I don't eat one very often, though, because
no,
you know what?
It's a rare.
It's not healthy.
I'm going to have one.
Let's
now.
Be fair. Are you?
A Benidorm bar has sold a 2,600 calorie full English breakfast.
Have they?
Which is the same as 5 McDonald's Big Macs.
See.
And people are commenting underneath it, claiming it looks rank and so wrong. It's a full English pizza. So it's a full English on top of a pizza that you then imagine. Can you imagine getting that in your mouth? You get it all over yourself.
I don't even like chicken on pizza. I find that upsetting. I find that weird, don't you? Is that just me? Chicken on pizza?
Yeah.
It is odd.
That is weird,
chicken.
Yeah.
Chicken on pizza is pretty acceptable. No. What do you have on yours?
Well, you know, I have the stuff that you would not ham, olives, mozzarella, maybe
a bit. You've got to move on, man.
No.
Carbonara.
Spicy chicken's fine, isn't it?
Pizza Express do a carbonara. Fantastic.
Yeah, but that's pasta, right?
Yeah, but no, it's just a flavour. It's just a flavour. It's not that, but it's just a flavour.
Carbonara pizza.
It is absolutely lovely.
I'm not having it.
Lovely. With a cheesy sauce, with a bechamel sauce on the top. It's beautiful.
I need a new co-presenter.
Really love it.
I need a new co-presenter. He has no
taste.
And
a fried egg.
What's that? But
lovely.
But a full English breakfast on a pizza. Why? I don't understand.
It's a very strange thing now where we've started deep frying burgers and we're trying to almost add carbs inside carbs. And it's almost like...
Yeah. Can I just give you one word? Scotland.
Disgusting. Yeah, quite.
Is the word I'm using, right? And two more words, heart disease. This is not good for you. Most Scottish people, the reason that Scotland doesn't have a massive pension crisis is because most of them die at 67. And that's because they eat stuff like that.
Well, this is in Benidorm, but there may be Scots eating.
Okay.
You can't just drag Scots into every unhealthy thing
I'm
ever
not, read. But I'm saying in terms
you
of the food...
You might have to gig up there against...
I them. Will, but that's okay.
Back down.
You know what? I'm prepared to take the flak. From whoever's left after they eat the sort of stuff they eat. It's not good for you.
It's not.
Deep fried stuff and having a massive... I mean, a full English breakfast is enough without putting it on a pizza, isn't it? Also, by the way, it's an aberration in terms of the food itself. Why are they messing with the food?
It seems to be covered in cheese as well, which is another...
No.
Problem.
Well, that's I understand that from a pizza point of view.
Pizza point of view.
Yeah, but still.
And the beans. It's just going to be a wet mess.
I don't like the sound of it at all. And it's 2,600 calories, which is above the recommended daily allowance for a grown human.
For a family of 10.
For a family of 10. Yeah, I mean, it's not good for you. I don't like these things. And I think we should be encouraged to be eating more healthily. I was watching a programme last night about how Kentucky Fried Chicken are reducing the calorie of their chips. Good. That's the way we want to go, not full English breakfast.
Their chips
on pizza.
Aren't salty enough, KFC.
Are they not? I haven't eaten them in there in years. Give us one more.
Ronnie Wood's episode of Who Do You Think You Are has been delayed because the Rolling Stones guitarist family is so complicated it's flummoxed experts. They've completely given up on Ronnie's family, who he describes as water gypsies.
Which are gypsies, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. Well, he's got the sort of, you know, the dark hair and the Romany looks, hasn't he? He calls them water gypsies and claims that his generation was the first to be born on dry land. Because they move around so much and they're on their canal boats, they've given up.
Right.
And nobody, I suppose, again, nobody writes down who was born where and with a relation. Nobody knows, do they?
It's a slightly different thing.
It's a bit looser.
Yeah, okay. So they don't. So basically, they haven't been able to work out who he's related to.
Given up. His marital history is also difficult. I know. Who knows?
His what?
His love life as well is difficult as well.
Yeah, but who do you think
you are? They don't need to do that. Maybe that's something his ex is shouting.
That's a different show.
Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you're having sex with now?
He's a West Brom fan, Ronnie Wood.
Which I would watch, to be honest. Sorry?
He's a West Brom fan.
But is he actually a football fan? One gets
mentioned in his autobiography.
Yeah, but has he been to games?
Come on. We're clinging on to any.
You've got good celeb supporters. You've got Frank Skinner. You've got Adrian Charles.
Ronnie Wood.
And
Eric
others.
Me. No,
Eric Clapton is a West Brom fan, is he?
Apparently.
Right.
But this is it. This is these black country myths. You can't trust them. Can't trust them.
Can you not?
Has he ever shivered his backside off on the Birmingham Road end? Has he ever been to
Plymouth? No, I don't imagine.
Probably not.
Has he been to Blackpool away on a wet Tuesday night? That's the thing, the way fans talk like that.
Always used to be. Halifax was the one.
Oh, mine one. Mine, in Arsenal, I went to Winterslag away in the the UEFA Cup, and I took a cup, Winterslag. That is the name of the place, right? Or Winterslag, I suppose they would say, in Flemish. And I went there on a coach. Took the coach there. We lost 2-1. Went out of the UEFA Cup, and then I got a coach back. Took 28 hours in total. Went to work the next morning.
Oh.
I did. It was rough. So you know what, fans do that sort of stuff. And
yes,
and
they do.
And the West Brom one is what shivered his arse off in the what? The road end.
Birmingham Road.
The Birmingham Road end. Okay, fair enough. I don't imagine Eric Clapton or Ronnie Wood ever have. I don't know. I might
be
wrong.
They're very welcome to.
Yeah, quite. Of course.
Very
of course.
Welcome to. We're very friendly.
This is what we've been talking about with Prince William this morning. Looked like an actual fan.
Yeah.
He couldn't
have been thoroughly briefed.
Yeah, if you didn't know he was the future King of England,
I want to see him eating a pie and having to queue with everyone else. I wanted to see the dreadful toilets that you can smell before you even reach. Well,
the fan experience, you know, certain people would only want to experience that to a point.
He doesn't have to, does he? He doesn't.
He can enjoy the good bits.
One feels like one is a fan. That's what I think about Prince William. Give us one more. Go on.
Satnav Pilgrim, who ended up in Rome, Germany, not Rome, Italy. A British pensioner decided to drive on a pilgrimage to Rome. He put his faith in the Lord and his sat-nav, but he put in Rom, Germany. He missed the last letter out, bless him. And he drove all the way to Germany, not Rome, Italy. The drive was, in fact, 840 miles away from the Italian capital in rural Rom near Cologne in Germany.
He drove all the way to Germany rather than Italy?
All the way from Newcastle. It was a Jaguar S-type saloon, rolled down a slope and crashed into a road sign. Which incidentally said Rom, so you'd think he'd have got the message by then.
I mean, also about the signs. Weren't the signs... did he ask directions? All these Italians are speaking German at me. It's a bit weird, isn't it? I mean...
it's a long time to spend in the car and not go for a loo break, isn't it? What do you mean? Because you'd have to have got out and looked around at signs and all sorts. You'd think that you'd notice you're in Germany, not Italy.
Well, maybe he thought he was passing through Germany on the way to Italy. Mm. Is a possibility. Listen, the guy obviously doesn't know. I don't think he should be in charge of a car, to be honest.
No,
I wouldn't
like that
let
age,
him be driving.
But
it's Prince Philip all over again.
To a certain extent, although this guy didn't hit anyone, as far as
I
know.
He hit a road sign.
Did he? He hit a road sign in the
end. Maybe if he'd hit someone, he'd have stopped sooner and realised he wasn't in Italy.
Yes, if somebody had put their hands out and said, 9! and he'd have gone, now that's weird, doof, as he hit them. And then he might have realised if that would have happened early on. I mean, you feel for him a little bit, don't you?
Well, they invaded Italy. I mean, they'd have thought that.
Then that's right. Really? Has it started again? I remember this from my childhood. There is that possibility. Maybe that's what he thought.
The incredible thing, he was from Italy as well. He was coming from Britain, but he was originally born in Italy. So you'd think he'd have spotted the lingo and the, you know, it said De Strasse rather than whatever the Italian is.
Yeah,
age-related.
I would say so. There's a lot wrong with this story. Anyway, so what happened in the end? Did he just turn around and come back, or did he then drive to Rome afterwards? And this was a religious pilgrimage, or just he wanted to see some of the sites?
I'd suspect it's a religious pilgrimage. Details are small.
God would have guided him, sent a sign.
Through his sat-nav.
Through his
Alexa or whatever else he's got.
Suddenly this turn deep left. Voice, turn left. Something like that. Where did that come from? I thought the sat-nav was a woman. Anyway, he got there in the end. We don't know.
Yeah. I don't think he did. He's so confused when he arrived.
He's still missing.
The disaster didn't end because he was so confused when he arrived, he forgot to put his handbrake on as he left the car and it rolled down and crashed into a sign. And then the police have had to intervene because they've got a police statement saying that they've picked him up. No one knows if he got there. No one knows if he got back. But we bless him. We hope the Pope intervenes.
We're praying for him, yeah. This is Love Sport. Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.